everyone. Welcome to Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I'm Josh Nason, writer, editor, and podcaster for the website. Been a long time. Hope you guys are doing good as always. It is, Friday, August 9th, so I'm recording this. Summer, sadly, coming to an end in a few weeks. Wife is going back to school teaching, kids going back to school, and we have football ahead. So there's that, and a bunch of fights to talk about. Yeah, and I had a cold brew coffee, and it feels like there's tiger blood coursing through my veins. So if I sound a little bit more amped than usual, that's why. A lot of caffeine, and I had another cup of coffee this morning, so I am juiced to the gills. Let's get right to it. So, been a while. I want to talk about some fights. I haven't done that in quite some time. So joining me is David McGrath. I almost said Dave McGrath. David McGrath. He is a MMA podcaster, and he did some stuff for MMA Torch back in the day. He's with an outlet called Rockfin, R-O-K-F-I-N, and they do, I guess it's from the one of the initial founders, or one of the founders of Flow Sports. So he did this separate entity, and Dave talks a little bit about that in this show. But yeah, he's been writing and kind of doing podcasts for a while, and I had a good time in his podcast a few months ago and wanted to do a home and home. So yeah, we just shot the shit about a lot of things in the world of MMA and kind of got his background on stuff and Colby Covington stuff and, you know, Trump stuff and, you know, basically all some of the, you know, big topics that came up during the week. And yeah, we did not talk about UFC Uruguay, the show that's coming up here in just a day or so, headlined by a title fight, which no one seemed to care about. And I'll talk about that a little bit at the close. So let's get right to it. Good conversation with Dave McGrath starting right about now. So I'm back. One of the guests I was planning having on during that 8-week stretch is here with me this week. And I was on his podcast, I'd say, yeah, about almost 2 months ago, it feels like, give or take, could be a month ago. I lose track of time, kids. Dave McGrath, and he does a bunch of different stuff, has a podcast, has done some writing before, and I don't want to get the outlets wrong, so we'll talk about all this stuff here. And Dave, I'll go in my podcast 101 book, and what it's supposed to say when I have a guest on, I'm going to just say, how you doing?
Right. Of course we have to have that. I'm doing great.
Good.
I'm going to go into my podcast 101 and shoot it right back to you and say, I hope your summer is great. We haven't talked in so long. Yeah. We're such good friends outside of this. What's up, Josh?
Yeah. Very good. Well done. Well done.
I've listened to enough WEEI in my days in Boston to know how this works, bro. I can do this all night.
Are you still listening to WEEI? There's nothing to listen to anymore.
Of course not, sir. Please. I don't want to get too localized here because I know you have such a great national audience and even worldwide. But the once mighty WEEI, which really kind of got me interested in doing this whole thing 100 years ago when I was a kid, has fallen, and it's fallen really hard. Would you agree? I don't know. I don't know where you stand. You might be a huge fan of the Hillman. If you are, great, Josh. Tell me about it, and maybe I can learn something new here, you know. But no, it's pretty awful, and I'm sure we're not too far away from country music or whatever.
That's right. No, I'm a Kirk Minifan. I'm a Minifan guy. Minifan. I'll say that. Not as
can
extreme.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah, go for
just
it.
Being honest with you, I don't mean to cut you off. You know, I'm an avid Minifan myself, Barstool listener. You got to have that, you know, that Jerry Callahan factor where, like, he had a guy to play off of. I just find these people to be insufferable bores that he's with.
Yeah, it's so for people who don't know what we're talking about. So I'm in you guys know, in Seacoast, New Hampshire. David actually is in Boston, Titletown, USA, just outside. And so New England, so we're talking about WEEI sports radio station, and Kirk Minahan was a host who is now with Barstool. And he hosts a show on there, and he basically, I could go through the whole story, but you can listen to his podcast if you're interested in it. It's a good, it's not necessarily too regional, but it gets regional at times. So that's kind of what we're talking about a little bit. But yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. Sometimes when I've heard this from other people that he kind of needs that counteractive, someone that actually can come at him and complain about stuff and go back and forth. That's when I think any host, I think it's in sports talk in general, tries to produce now, and it's hard when you try to produce and people know it. is you want that natural like counteractions. What ESPN does, what everyone does, they try to get people fighting with each other about stuff. And we have a little bit in MMA media, but not as much.
Yeah. I try to do it. I have like a rotating, and I stole it from them. I do like a casting couch thing where I have like a different person on with me every week.
Yeah.
Try to drum up. I just think that there's like, I think most people come on your podcast, they just want to be, they're too proper about it. You know, they don't want to disagree with me. They don't want to get into the fight. You know, I try to drum it up, but, you know, plus, you know, I don't know, maybe it's just my takes are just so dead on that how could you disagree? I don't know, Josh.
The hottest of takes. So let's tell people a little bit about, kind of like where you're from in terms of like how you got into this game, because your podcast stuff, writing stuff, and we were talking before that you've only really done this for a couple of years. You're doing some stuff for The Torch before, also Rockfin as well, doing podcasting and stuff. So kind of give people a little bit about where you come from, where you're at, and kind of what you do now.
Sure, man. Like first, you know, much like you, I'm from New England. I'm from the city. I grew up a mile from Fenway Park, a little bit from TD Garden. It's, you know, anybody who comes from this region, sports is in your blood, right? And especially fighting. Like I say this all the time to people who are not from this area. You know, there's boxing gyms close where I grew up in South Boston that I pretty much grew up in my entire life. There's Team City of Dong, which is right on the outskirts of Boston, which is probably the premier Muay Thai gym in the country, run by a guy who works for the UFC named Mark De La Grotte. So fighting, if you grew up in the city, is certainly in my blood. And everybody, and I know Dana White says it, and it's so true. I mean, everybody can relate to it on some level. Like me, I can't relate to being the star quarterback or the best athlete, you know. But I can relate to, you know, almost getting my backside kicked by the bully, you know, sort of after school. So, yeah, man. I mean, obviously, I grew up a major fan of the Red Sox and Patriots. But I could never really kind of duplicate how a big fight felt when I watch boxing. I was really, you know, there's like three stories you get when you ask somebody how they got into mixed martial arts. They go, oh, I was a big wrestling fan, which I was. Yeah. Huge wrestling fan growing up. Oh, I was a big boxing fan, which I was. Huge boxing fan. I was just always looking for sort of like that big fight feel, you know, like a Conor Khabib, you know, Daniel Cormier and John Jones. And there's no Super Bowl, World Series, Stanley Cup Finals, really, where I could really replicate that. And, you know, I sort of fell out of love with wrestling, maybe 1999-ish. I remember having tickets for WrestleMania 14, what happened at then the Fleet Center, I believe. And that being like the last golden night of my wrestling fandom. I remember I was like failing in school because I was so excited to go in March of 1998.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. All that being said, you know, and again, I found it really hard, Josh, to invest in storylines that I knew were not going to, the blow off wasn't going to happen in a way that was authentic. Let's put it that way. And I know wrestling geeks are going to at me right now. And it's weird too, because now at age 34, I've kind of come back around to being a lurker of the wrestling world at this point. And I'll go back sometimes. And, you know, at age 17, I left, and I'll make this very short. I left, home and, lived all over the world. I had one of the greatest lives you could ever have. I lived in Italy. I did deployments in Iraq and Afghanistan as a member of the United States Army. And when I got done, you know, 10 years later, I never punched a time clock in my life. I never had a coworker at age 30. Honestly, I really didn't. And when I got out, man, I was just like pretty shell-shocked by the world. You know, my entire adult life was spent in a very close-knit kind of thing. Living all over the world and of course, taking the injuries that come along with war. And honestly, Josh, like I was just when I got out, I was super depressed. I just didn't know how to get back into the real world, man. It was such a common problem, you know. And I, of course, my MMA fandom was huge all the way through. The military has a great combatives program, a jiu-jitsu program where you know, I made my way all the way up to instructor and civilian brown belt and competed in a lot of amateur MMA fights. So that was really cool. And, you know, long story short, I was just like, got home, met my wife, got a normal job. And of 2 years of just not being able to realize, to assimilate myself back into real life, I was just like, you know what? Came home, my wife's pregnant with our first son, Gunner, who's now 5. Or maybe he was even a year old at that point. I apologize. I'm mixing up the timeline. I was like, I'm not going to have a real job anymore because I can't do it. And I'm going to chase what I want to do in my life. Immediately, like the next week, I enrolled in school. I got my 4-year degree. I'm back now again doing that. I got this really cool mentorship at ESPN. So I've been spending some time up there. I'll be back there next week. I didn't even think you could really do this whole MMA media thing if it wasn't for a chance meeting with a guy named Keith Schillen, who lives in my neighborhood, who's a writer for Sure Dog, who's been in the game forever. And we just talked about it one day, and he had his own website, and I just started kind of writing stuff. And writing has always been a massive interest of mine over everything. I just feel like I can express myself better through that. And that's where I kind of got my start. And after he shut down the site to go to Sure Dog, which was the right decision, I sort of just became the ultimate freelancer, torch stuff. And then the guy who created Flow Sports, a guy named Martin Floriani, and I hooked up. And he was like, I want you to do all your MMA writing and all your MMA podcasts with me. And I'm going to pay you in a really interesting way. Via Ray tokens, which are sort of cryptocurrency that nobody understands. And I'm certainly not going to bore the hell out of your audience right now by talking about it. And it's literally myself, Ben Askren, Jordan Burroughs, Nick Diaz, and Adam Hunter is your MMA content on that site. Yeah, like a year and a half into it, I'm kind of already right there. And I feel like I skipped the line a little bit, but for that last year and a half, I've been, for the last 2 years, you know, once I set my mind to, okay, if I just work hard, I'll get somewhere in this. You know what I mean? It really all was born from the idea, Josh, that I never, my 10 years in the military, I never once felt like I had a normal job. I didn't feel like work. I loved what I was doing. I got out, and then I all of a sudden was in a retail hell that felt like work, and I just didn't like it, didn't want it, and didn't want to live the next 40, 50 years of my life doing that, man.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I think a lot of people run into that, and some people just, they don't have an outlet. They don't have an outlet, and they don't know really kind of what to do. They don't have people around them, and they don't get advice along the way. I was interested about the combatives program, because that's something I've heard about a lot. Is people have done that and trained in it, and it's kind of cool. We see a lot of, obviously, USC fighters go overseas and they'll do training and things like that. And often they talk about that being one of their favorite, like, charitable things to do, or their favorite, like, events to do, and all that. Did you ever run into any pro fighters that did the combatives, or was it just kind of just your boys and girls, so to speak?
First of all, let me say that your fans might not want to hear this, but the most interesting conversation I've ever had and most respected I've ever felt by a celebrity, quote unquote, was Vince McMahon when I met him in Afghanistan. Jesus, at this point, this would have been about 9 years ago now.
Wow.
All right. That being said, he was just great to me. And he picked up on my accent pretty immediately and told me a lot of old cool stories about the WWE and how it started down the Cape and stuff I didn't even know about, you know? And, certainly, met the likes of, you know, Brian Stan, Liz Carmouche, all who are veterans themselves, you know, Damian Brown, who's an Australian Army veteran I met. The program that the military has set is essentially begins at white belt jujitsu, which is the basic stuff you could learn in a jujitsu gym right now, anywhere on any corner and in Boston or New Hampshire, wherever you are. And then it sort of builds from there, and it mixes in a lot of interesting stuff, a lot of Krav Maga type stuff, which is Israeli fighting, which is really interesting. They really don't have much of a belt system. It's kind of odd, but Israeli special forces use it. It's a program that if you're interested in that kind of stuff, and I always say that jiu-jitsu is the best thing I ever picked up for my own mental health. It's just such a great outlet, you know, and you can continue going on forever and ever and ever. And I stuck with it for 10 years, which is like, who sticks with anything for 10 years in life nowadays? You know what I mean? I can't stick with something for 10 minutes, you know, in my life. So, the program is excellent. Lots of UFC fighters and Bellator fighters I've met through my times in the military. There's a guy, Tim Johnson, who's a Bellator heavyweight, who's fighting here in a couple weeks. And I personally know there's that gentleman is a guy who we should all respect for things that have nothing to do with the cage. And I'll leave it there. The military influence on the UFC and MMA is bigger than most people would think, for sure.
Yeah. So I'm really fascinated by the Vince McMahon meeting. So was WWE doing a show there? Tell me about this whole thing. I'm fascinated by this.
So we were in Farah, Afghanistan. Okay. So this is a dangerous place. This is a place you have to understand something about that country. Most people who live in Afghanistan don't even know that they live in that country. Okay. There's no nationalism. Like me and you, we're Bostonians. We'd meet each other in a bar, we'd have a beer, and we'd talk about home. These people have no concept of home. Most of the places that we were at weren't even mapped. There were people out there who could simply not access these places to even do the topography for maps. And Vince McMahon would actually make it out to us somehow, some way. Normally, you know, the bigger stars would stay at the localized bases that are in the bigger parts of the country. But Vince would make it out to us. It was interesting. Bigger guy than you would think.
Yeah.
It's really hard. I mean, it's kind of gone away from me now, but at that time, you guys was pretty starstruck. I mean, I grew up a massive fan of the WWE, and you know, it kind of gives you that back slap, and it hurt. You know, guy's pretty strong. And, yeah, I just walked away. Listen, and I fight with this every day in this business, because I meet some people, you know, like a Colby Covington, for instance, who I'm sure we'll talk about, who have this sort of demonized sort of persona. And then when you meet them, you're kind of disappointed, because in the end, you know, it doesn't seem like they're that bad a guy. And especially when they take a personal interest in how you're doing, you know, they're not doing it in front of any cameras. There's nobody out there who's going to go back and tell that story. It's just going to be all kept between us. And really, that's how you judge someone, right? How they treat people like that when there's nobody around.
Yeah, I think of like the stories, and we hear this all the time with, you know, Boston sports, that the athletes that will do go to hospitals and do stuff, but they don't want media around. You know what I mean? They just kind of just go and do it, you know? And I think if I was ever a pro athlete, that'd be kind of cool to do, is just to do drop-ins and on the days when there's nothing going on, or even the days there are stuff going on, but do stuff without cameras around and, you know, doing all that stuff. Yeah. So that's interesting to hear.
You have to understand how difficult that trip is. I mean, that's a lot of hours. That's a lot of security, lots of heat. There's not running water out there. You're not just going to go stop by a 7-Eleven and grab a fudge round, you know, like my 5-year-old does. This is none of that, you know? So yeah, it's not an easy thing. So you have to be pretty dedicated to it. You know, that being said, you know, the WWE product sucks, so who cares what he does?
If Vince hears this, and he's going to be that David McGrath, I knew it.
Yeah, I remember that kid. Yep. He was a private. Couldn't bench what I bench, even at 70. No, probably not. You're right, Vince. I'm a lean guy. I like to run.
Yeah. Well, cool. Let's talk about some fighting stuff. There's a lot's been going on. I haven't done a show in a while, even though I've been watching everything, interested in some stuff, not interested in other stuff. So I don't really have an agenda. But I want to kind of start with this. When I talk about, okay, when I say MMA story, go, what is the first thing that pops into your head is like the most newsworthy or most interesting to you right now?
Yeah, I'll throw you a curveball. I think that the ongoing saga of one of the biggest managers in the world, Ali Abdelaziz, is always one that's close to my top of my agenda.
Oh, all right. I like this curveball. Let's run with this.
Yeah, I mean, I got to be honest with you. I'm not the type of guy, Josh, who's going to write a fight recap. I'm not going to give you a play-by-play. I'm really, you know, and I heard your podcast with Jeremy Botter, who's one of my journalistic heroes. And again, you know, Jeremy's been generous with me in the past with his time and just letting me pick his brain. And then that really shows you the true character of some of these guys. But Yeah. At this point, I'm always interested to see what is next with Ali Abdulaziz. There is, you know, some notions out there right now, according to the great Mike Russell, who's really a made it sort of his life's work to cover Ali and his misdeeds, that he's not credentialed to be at UFC events. It sort of ties into to the Colby Covington sort of news of the week, considering that Kamaru Usman, his client, is the current welterweight champion of the world. Colby Covington wears a red hat, and a lot of people don't like that, and I get it. But we have to understand, too, and never look over the fact that Ali Abdelaziz, Kamaru Usman's manager, has done prison time, was a New York Police Department and Federal Bureau of Investigation informant, who essentially snitched on his terrorist buddies and has massive ties, including a wedding, a marriage by marriage to a terrorist organization that has killed Americans in the Jemaat al-Fuqa group. So I think that if the MMA or the UFC is ever going to be a truly legitimate sport, and by legit, I mean, we all know they're on ESPN. We kind of have to make sure that we cover these stories. And guys like Ali Abdulaziz are not allowed to operate in the foreground of MMA because it's not a good thing. I'll just say that.
Yeah, he represents a ton of people. That's the thing, is that I know that I haven't done too much of a deep dive into the Russell stuff, but you know, I know that he's been that's been a thing for, I mean, at least well over a year. Some of the stuff he's done, but I mean, it's funny because Ali, like, he manages all these champions and in these guys, and he'll get guys fights, and it's he represents a lot of guys. He's a major power broker in the sport. It's like him and in the Cowell brothers. Yeah, good.
We're talking the likes of Henry Cejudo, Justin Gaethje, Kamaru Usman, Kayla Harrison. These are just off the top of my head. Khabib Nurmagomedov, who of course has his own ties to things that are distasteful, to say the least, and that is the barest bones, I could call it, including Chechen dictators who commit gay purges in Russia. All the biggest names in the sport essentially are tied to Ali Abdulaziz. So yes, he's a major power broker.
Yeah, crazy stuff. What? Mine, I think, was the Covington stuff. Obviously, he had that. Obviously, just a dominant win last Saturday with Robbie Lawler, which was, I was surprised how easy he made it look. And at this point, I don't know why. I figured that Lawler would have a little bit more for him, but he just seemed to like. He seemed to be more intent on like doing the Mike Tyson bob and weave than anything when it came to like. Just the old kind of old, I'm saying, you always see things like old school Robbie Lawler and like old school fighters, but you know, sometimes they just get old and they can't pull the trigger for whatever reason. And it just wasn't what I expected out of Lawler, but I mean, Covington was great. And then, you know, he does the UFC post show, which I usually don't watch, but the Usman clip, that was interesting, those two guys going back and forth. And then what I was really interested in during the day, and you allude to it, I don't get bothered by this, is the whole Trump thing. The fact that and we've never had this before, a sitting president of the U.S., either a sitting I won't say retired, but like out of office president, has never tweeted, talked about MMA at all. And not only did Trump retweet something about Covington that day, his two sons are there right in the front row, and they're not. It's not kind of just this thing where they're like, "Oh, this is cute. This UFC fighter, is a big fan or what have you." Like the fact that the sitting president, who has tens of millions of followers on Twitter, is giving his attention to a guy that's not even a champion. It's just that is an amazing. Politics aside, that is an incredible achievement. That's the best way I can describe it. And that he's got this level of attention. In fact, his sons are in the front row with this. And this is, I mean, this guy, it's a big deal, but it is a big deal in the sense that it's someone that outside our world is like acknowledging this at that level. Like the amount of people that know about Colby Covington now is so much more than, you know, what it was, even a week ago. And I just kind of think about, I was just amazed by that. Obviously the big win. And then, you know, even after George Masvidal had that impressive, like, quick second knockout of Ben Askren. And now we're here thinking about, okay, Covington and Usman has to be the next fight. So this whole thing has kind of been top of my mind this week.
I got to tell you, I said about 2 weeks ago on my podcast that Colby Covington would have to get the president to tweet about him to get the shot over Masvidal. Well, looks like that happened. That's what I said. I was like, anything short, you know, at the time we, you know, again, as MMA fans and media members, aren't we like just such prisoners in the moment? And if Jorge came out and fought tomorrow and won a tough decision, he'd be the next guy. Right. That being said, you know, I got to tell you, Josh, I'm just not, you know, I'm an old school pro wrestling fan, just like you. Love the heels. I see right through it with Colby. He doesn't bother me. Like, I'm not so offended by this guy. I'm just really not, you know. His manager is Dan Lambert, who, of course, was a part of TNA at one point. He was a heel guy. You see, you know, these pre-prepared lines that Colby kind of spouts out. I do think, however, at this point, if anybody in any way, shape, or form doesn't, you know, I mean, Dana White's been endorsing Donald Trump since 2016. You know, Vince McMahon's wife is a member of his cabinet. Am I correct on that? I believe she is.
She was before. I think she might have stepped down, but yeah, you're pretty much right. Yeah.
65 million people voted for Donald Trump. You know, it's just not, I get it. Listen, if we got a guy there in Leon Edwards in the welterweight division, who's won 7 fights in a row. Nobody knows who the hell he is. Right.
Yeah.
Colby Covington, go back, you know, James Lynch, who's on my podcast often, he does tons of interviews with fighters. He had one that he retweeted from like 2 years ago where Colby Covington was respectful to everybody and he was nobody, right? He was just a 170-pound fighter who was a little bit undersized who wrestled pretty well. I mean, how many of those guys do we have, right? Mm. He had to do something. It just doesn't offend me. And listen, at this point, Josh, I don't know about you. He dominates Dos Anjos. He dominates Damian Maya. He dominates Robbie Lawler. I mean, at what point are we going to throw our hands up and go, okay, we don't like the guy, but guess what? He's pretty damn good. We have to give him that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And he's the gimmick is not, he is not as good as Connor is or as Chael is, or they just,
apparently not.
Yeah. They have something else. I've talked about this before. Like, I remember seeing Covington interviews from last year and it just was kind of like, you could tell, like, he's almost like trying not to laugh through saying some of the lines. Yeah. And it's just like, it's like, okay. And it's, people get so upset at it. It's like, if you don't, people just need, they need to like take a step back and be like, it's an act and it's working. Like this, he's,
it's working.
Yeah. It's working. Yeah. I mean, this is a guy that has a fighting style that a lot of people would deem boring before. And all of a sudden now he's in a position that the president of the United States is being like, I mean, this is just insane.
Insane.
Yeah.
This could only happen in MMA, Josh.
It really could. Only happen in
MMA. And again, you know, people are going to try and, you know, I've already seen the Twitterverse. Oh, that was a terrible, you know, it was I had tickets to the show and I didn't go. You know why? Because it's Newark, New Jersey, and it's 3:00 in the afternoon. And no, you know what I mean? I didn't go. And you know what, Josh, I found it hard to give those tickets away. So a lot of people are like, oh, you know, this is Colby's first main event or a second main event spot, whatever it was. Didn't do well. Shows he's not a draw. It was one of the worst undercards I've ever seen for a championship fight. The ratings would show that it spiked during the main event. You mentioned he's not a McGregor. That's for sure. McGregor is very quick off the cuff. Colby is not a good natural speaker. I think we can both agree with that. He's pretty tough mispronouncing words.
Yeah.
He stammers a little bit. You can tell that these lines are pre-prepared by Dan Lambert. And there's a lot of Chael Sonnen in them too. You could tell those guys are from the same area. Chael Sonnen grabbed a hold of this guy at some point in the last couple of years and said, hey man, if you want to do it, you got to do it this way. And look, I mean, he's going to headline Madison Square Garden. He's going to do it. And Donald Trump is probably going to be sitting cage side. We all need to eat that now and realize it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Lambert has been the huge influence, you know, and Colby did some, when Dan Lambert was doing some stuff with TNA, Impact Wrestling, last year, 2 years ago, Covington was part of that whole thing. So he's been just like soaking all this stuff in. And I'm sure Lambert is at some point along the way has been like, look, and he was the guy to kind of give him a lot of this guidance. I mean, he's got this amazing wrestling belt collection. He's a huge pro wrestling fan. Like, I have no doubt he's been the guy that's been behind a lot of this. And yeah, with the, yeah, I saw a lot of people talking about, you know, the afternoon show and being a, you know, Colby and sellout and things like that. He doesn't finish fights. So that's a huge thing for your average fans that they like people that finish fights. That's it. And people, you can say, look, he's super skilled and all this stuff. It's like, that's cool. And that's great for the hardcores and people like us that watch pretty much everything. But for, again, for your average fans, they want finishers. They want knockouts. They want submissions. They want like the stuff that they, any of the stuff that is like people talk about, you know, wrestling or boxing or MMA or anything like that. It's almost like they want an embodiment of themselves to say, I wish I could do that, you know? And people could be like,
want it to be relatable.
Yeah. Yeah. And they want to be like, I wish I could. That's why Tyson was so big. The fact was so impressive. Like, I wish I could knock out someone like that's just amazing because people can't do that. And that's the difference between being a recognizable name that people are interested in, and then being a superstar beyond that. And I have no doubt. I mean, I think this Usman coming to fight, assuming it happens, it'll be a 25-minute affair. Sure. I'm not seeing either guy. They can talk about knockouts, or they just don't have the track record for it at this point. And that's fine. That's just the way it is. You know, that's the huge difference.
I think I'm in the minority. I just think that this fight with Colby giving ample enough time to sell it could main event Madison Square Garden, no problem. Maybe I'm just seeing it through my glasses. You know, I'm a fan of no fighter, but you know, I judge it by a couple of things. A, does my wife know who he is? She's the ultimate casual fan. She knows who Conor McGregor is, John Jones, Ben Askren, and she knows who Colby Covington is. He's starting to creep into that level where the average person on the street, hey, I know that guy. And that's really what does big business, you know? I think I'm in the minority. I think that fight could easily headline Madison Square Garden, no problem. Hmm. I really do.
Yeah, I bet it's co-main. I bet they'll do something above that. It's possible, yeah, and all, because they have shows every single weekend, so it's hard to kind of gauge. But you know what? I mean, that easily could be it. Cause you remember a year ago they was like the month before they had to get injured Daniel Cormier and broken down Derek Lewis to main event a show at Madison Square Garden. I couldn't, that whole thing. And then you think about the way the main events were the past years prior to that, like. I don't know. I still can't believe that they went a month into that and could not find a main event for
Derek Lewis fought at UFC 229 and UFC 230. That's all you need to know. When they were like 3 weeks apart.
Yeah.
In a co-main and a headlining spot, they were supposed to get Diaz Poirier, of course, Nate Diaz, who the hell knows what ended up happening. We didn't get that fight. And the co-main event was Jacare Souza and Chris Weidman. It was a very underwhelming card considering they did McGregor Alvarez and GSP Bisping in the two fights, you know, two cards at MSG prior. So yeah, you're going to think that, you would think anyway, that they're going to want to stack this card, but who's going to be available? I mean, maybe, Amanda Nunes comes back and defends her belt by that point against who? I mean, I don't know. Is anybody going to be clamoring for, you know, Amanda Nunes and, you know, give me a female fighter who's on the rise? Cause it's you're not going to be sideways. Unless of course, Josh, Valentina Shevchenko goes up to 135, and I wouldn't be surprised if that happened.
I wouldn't be either, just because they seem to when they have a lack of options for contenders, they all of a sudden move someone up a division and be like, okay, let's just do this, you know. And if they were able, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you where you thought Cyborg was going to end up, because that's really my second biggest story on my mind this
Yeah,
week.
I think it's going to be a Ryzen Bellator co-contract, because they can flip people, but they have this the working agreement. My guess is that maybe it could be Bellator, just going to be a little bit bigger splash, and then there's an agreement that she can work Ryzen shows as well. I think they really want to make that Gabby Garcia fight at some point. Yeah. You know, that she doesn't have to cut weight or anything like that, and you know, just kind of a freak show fight, and then she can fight Julia Budd at Bellator. I think that's my guess, is because they have this co-promotion deal that they'll figure out something where it's like, look, let's make this work for both of us. She gets the opportunity to work both spots. I mean, she's not going to go to one. I don't think she's going to go to PFL. I can't see that unless they throw a shit ton of money at her. But I think she seems to be a type that she wants options. You have promotion that can work both ways like that with Bellator and Ryzen. That, to me, that seems to make the most sense.
Sure. Yeah. I guess I would like to see her in the PFL against Kayla Harrison, just because she's a fresh match. And they, if they offer the million, you know, I didn't realize until this week that Kayla Harrison fights at 155 pounds. That's incredible.
That's right. Yeah.
Goes to show you how much I watch the Professional Fighters League.
Outside Kayla Harrison, there's really not much of a reason to watch it. I mean, there's just, it's, that's the thing, is that there's so much stuff on this whole, like, I don't know, with the Bellator shows, it feels like Bellator has been completely off the map, off the radar, for the past couple months. And this weird thing
wasn't
they're doing.
The last show they did that we couldn't even watch it or something? Wasn't that the Musashi? I couldn't even find the damn thing.
Yeah. So they're doing this a lot now where they're taking a car and they're like, okay, this part of this is only available. If you want to watch it on TV, you can't. You have to watch it on the app. And the other part you can watch via tape delay on DAZN and Paramount, but I think it might be like the next day, but it's only part of the card. And I remember asking Bellator PR, is like, so I can't watch this Musashi title fight unless I watch it on the app. And like, yeah. And I said, so what about why do you have a deal with DAZN then? I don't understand this. And like, yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's the way that, because of this UK deal, I think Bellator has hit a point where they're like, look, we're as big as we're going to get in the US and we want to make this hard push in the UK. And cause this next thing that they're doing, this split show, like MVP is coming back to fight, but you can only see that on the app because it's part of the Bellator UK version just for that audience. And there's some other fight as well. It's like, I don't know. It's just weird how DAZN has this streaming deal. So you figure, okay, if I'm paying, you know, $10 a month or whatever it is for DAZN, I should be able to see everything Bellator, but it's not the way that they do it. It's really, really weird.
Sure. I think that, you know, and too with Bellator, just my piece on, I cover a lot of Bellator events live. I just covered the MSG show. I thought that was the biggest night and obviously the history of the promotion. I've always said that they're one big star away from really being legitimate competition. I really think that they thought that guy was going to be Michael Venom Page, and he just doesn't have the chops in the octagon, unfortunately. But there's some really interesting prospects, you know, the AJ McKees of the world, the young wrestler who loses often lately, Aaron Pico,
yeah.
Yeah. He's sort of got the Cody Garbrandt syndrome. But, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, at this point, I know we're trying to disagree here, but I would agree. I just think they've kind of hit that ceiling in the United States. And, listen, if people can't find your programming, you know, as a rule, Josh, that's probably not a good thing.
I just want one place to watch it. That's the best thing about this ESPN UFC deal. And I got to say, like, if you scroll through, if you have an ESPN Plus subscription, I would guarantee if you're listening to this, you probably do. They have so much UFC shit on there. It is amazing. Like I canceled my Fight Pass stuff
awesome. A lot.
Yeah, it's like any, like, not every single show, but I mean, this is the thing they don't really talk about that much, and they probably don't want to for a reason, is like a month after pay-per-views, they will run pay-per-views, like edited versions on ESPN2 quite a bit. So you don't even really have to have Fight Pass. It was weird, like, I was going through, because there was a pay-per-view I had seen bits and pieces of, and they played like, they edited it down. They only showed like two rounds of a three-round fight, three rounds of a five-round title fight. And I was just like, where's round? All of a sudden they jumped from 1-2 to five. It was the Holloway-Poirier fight, I think. Okay. And I was like, okay, I want to just actually watch this, like watch this again. And I was like, 1-2, and then they jumped it, and I'm like, they're really editing this down. Like, all right, I guess I'm good with this. You know, it was just kind of like, it was just unusual how they did that. But regardless, sure, they have like everything on there, but Bellator doesn't have that. Like, I don't know if I want to go watch, you know, Eddie Alvarez's first Bellator title win. I assume I would go to Bellator.com, but I'd rather just go to DAZN and have the archives of everything and be able to just go and do that. That's just, I don't know. It's simplicity, you know?
Sure. Yeah. And you know what? It's true. The ESPN deal, first of all, you know, as both of us going back to our MMA fandom, you would never see, it's just every time I open up an ESPN app and look at MMA coverage or watch it on TV, I'm still flabbergasted, because that was never even a thing. You know, we couldn't even have dreamed of that, you know, 8 years ago, 7 years ago, whatever. you know, only time we would see an ESPN fighter headlining a SportsCenter, where, you know, if somebody died or killed someone, you know, and we just would never do that. Now, you know, Conor McGregor sneezes, you know, and it's going to headline SportsCenter tomorrow, and they're going to start with Ariel Helwani, and, you know, we're going to break it down and everything, but it's still pretty incredible. And the UFC, listen, they've been on a hell of a run. This is the best run that I can remember in recent history anyway, as far as my mind goes back in the hard drive, of just main events and fights. You know, I know they have an event every week, but, you know, when you go all the way back to McGregor, Habib, you know, at 229 all the way through, through Khabib, Poirier, you know, we have DC Stipe coming up in a couple of weeks. You have Adesanya and Robert Whittaker, which has the potential to be the best of all of them. UFC is on a hell of a run right now. If you're a fan of the UFC, this is probably the best time we've ever had of high profile main co-mains. You know, Nate Diaz returns. Yeah, this is a good time to be a UFC fan. And like you said, the ESPN Plus app is just overloaded with content. And me and you should get some proceeds from all the apps we're selling right now.
No kidding. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff on. There's a lot of shows. You know, sometimes I think, you know, fights can get lost in the mix, you know, because they're just you're on to the next one, on to the next one. You have no time to really process what you just saw.
None.
You have to find time and make sure, okay, did I watch everything? Maybe I want to watch this prelim fight. I didn't get a chance to see this yet. And next thing you know, there's 13 more fights in the chamber ready to go for the next weekend. Plus, if there's another big Bellator show or anything like that. One recent result that has changed the course of someone's career, Frankie Edgar, dropping that fight to Max Holloway. He's officially going down to bantamweight for his next fight. And I think that's good. He can make a run at another title. And when you heard this, or when I say that, what comes to mind? What do you want to see him at next? Who do you want to see him fight next, I should say?
Do you want to know my honest thing that comes to mind? Is like, you know, I'm over it, to be brutally honest with you, but it's a talk show, so let's talk. I've heard some people on Twitter today calling for, you know, Aljamain Sterling. Fire your manager immediately, Aljamain, if you take that fight. You know, the next one for you is for the title.
Yep.
Fighting Frankie Edgar in a fight that's a dangerous one, you could potentially lose, that's going to gain you nothing. I wouldn't mind a Cody Garbrandt. I said that earlier. Cody Garbrandt's lost three fights in a row. There was a time in the UFC where if you lost three fights in a row, you were going to get released from your contract. Me and you talked about this a while back. It was the too much too soon factor. And I've used that line every time Garbrandt's come up since then, because it's so true. He needs to get back on track. He's a big star. The UFC could do something with him. They could still draw money with him, but they got to kind of rebuild him. And why not start with Frankie Edgar? And Frankie Edgar, let's be honest. I mean, he's not going to go down and fight, you know, the number 14 guy that nobody's ever heard of. I mean, it's going to be a name. So Garbrandt makes a lot of sense. That being said, I mean, listen, I have to preface every Frankie Edgar discussion with, he's one of my all time favorite fighters from way back. I mean, he's one of the reasons why I stayed glued to MMA for as long as I did. That being said, you know, if he leaves the gloves in the octagon, you know, I wouldn't be too sad either. I was not inspired by anything in that performance against Max. And I know Max is great. And Max is, I couldn't, there's not enough adjectives for me for Max Holloway. I just think he's that great. But, you know, Frankie did nothing for me in a show that did nothing for me in Edmonton at 240. So
yeah, it really wasn't much on that show. Frankie, the Garbrandt fight, I wouldn't mind seeing that. It really depends. I could see them giving Garbrandt someone a lot lower, just because if they think that they still have something in them, that they may be like, okay, Frankie goes and steamrolls him, or, you know, we do a, you know, I almost said Fox main event. If we do a ESPN Plus main event, ESPN Plus main event or ESPN show with that, and basically dominates him over five rounds, and maybe that isn't as good for us. I wouldn't mind seeing there's options for Edgar. I think he's, you know, he kind of exhausted everything at 155, dropped down to 145. And now, you know, I think this will be a good, you know, good kind of final run for his career. And I mean, it'd be kind of fun to see an Edgar Dominic Cruz fight, if, Cruz can ever come back from injury. I think that could be kind of fun. There's fun matchups and names, to your point, even guys that aren't necessarily top five, but maybe, you know, top somewhere in that top 10 that are interesting names that could, they could do, you know, a lot of different, again, ESPN plus main events and things like that. So yeah, I'm for this. I for some reason, what stuck out in my head at that Holloway fight was, remember that random fight that Frank Yeager had with Uriah Faber in Manila like 2 years ago?
I do.
I don't know why that just ran. Like, I was so excited for that fight. It kind of ended up being a dud. And I was just like, this is like two fun names. These guys have been around forever. This should be great. And it was like, yeah, it's all right. You know?
Yeah. That happens in MMA too. Like, it's kind of tough, you know, where the events are not scripted and you can't kind of follow, you know, I mean, who would have thought that Francis Ngannou and Derek Lewis would be a 3-round stinker where they threw like 15 total shots, you know? Yeah. That was one of those fights where if you blink your eyes, it's over. You know, I was at a Bellator event in Connecticut a few months ago where the main event ended on a nut shot 30 seconds into it.
Oh, the Mitrione.
Scott Coker told us after the show, he literally said, I don't script this. What do you want me to do? That was what he said. And you know what? It was the only honest answer.
And those guys are running it back too.
Yeah, they are. I believe they're running it back in a couple weeks here. I think it's going to be in Connecticut again.
Yeah.
Notorious Nick Newell is on that card. Shout out to Nick Newell, New England. It's crazy with Edgar too, with newer fans. This guy was once the 155-pound champion who beat BJ Penn in Abu Dhabi, I believe at UFC 100. I could be wrong, 102, 103, right in there. And he just looked like a midget compared to 145-pound Max Holloway. It's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was 112 is what you're thinking of, if I remember it. Yeah, because I remember UFC 118 was the one in Boston. That was the rematch. I could be getting my numbers wrong, too. But I definitely remember 118 was the one in Boston, though.
Sure. Yeah, 118 and 220 were the Boston cards I can remember. And it's topical because we have another Boston card coming up. Where our local boy Calvin Kattar is going to fight Zabit, it looks like. Tough matchup for Calvin.
That's what I was just going to ask you about. Good transitions. Yeah, so the show started to come together. Their first show back in Boston since 220 last January. So a Friday night show, not headlined by a local guy. So that's kind of interesting. So we'll see how it does. I don't think it'll sell out just because we'll kind of obviously see what happens with it, because I'm always kind of surprised. But, you know, not being a pay-per-view night, not necessarily being a, you know, a big show at this point. But, yeah, you have Weidman versus Dominic Reyes in the main event. You have Zabit and Calvin Kattar in the co-main. From what I understand, they'd love to get Rob Font on that show. He has not been offered anyone yet. And they're also trying to get his management's also trying to get Kyle Bochniak on that show as well. So trying to load up basically a lot of the Boston guys are on the last show that did so well in that big run of 220. Trying to find the fights on this show as well.
Yeah, it looks like Macy Barber is going to fight on that card too.
Yes.
It's a very interesting up and coming prospect. There was another fight announced. I believe Darren Wynn is going to be on the card. Rob Font's an interesting fighter who more people should pay attention to. He's a ranked guy. Listen, Calvin Kattar, it's sort of a career-defining moment for him. Nobody's been able to figure out Zabit yet. Kyle Bochniak, who's a Boston guy who you can't blink when you watch him fight, took Zabit into some pretty deep waters. If their fight was sort of buried on the prelims last year, I thought Zabit passed the test quite nicely against him, against Bochniak, because Bochniak is a brawler, tried to do that with Zabit. Zabit's beat Jeremy Stevens, Brandon Davis. You know, a win over Calvin Kattar is probably going to get him very close to the title discussion. I'm a little disappointed that they didn't do Zabit and Ortega like I thought they would, and maybe put Calvin Kattar with a lower-ranked guy. But, yeah, the event definitely won't sell out. I mean, there's just no juice for Chris Weidman and Dominic Reyes. It's a misplaced main event. I would have rather have seen the week after's main event in San Francisco, Joanna Young Jacek and Michelle Watterson headline it. Then it probably would have done better numbers.
Yeah, it'll be kind of interesting to see how they fill the rest of the show, because there's not, you know, we'll see if there's a, you know, Joe Lozon appearance. He always used to you know, fights at the Garden pretty regularly. So they still can do some things. So I'm guessing, I'm guessing probably around 10. If they're lucky, maybe 11. I just, I, again, October Friday night, it's just it could be a little bit tough, but I don't know.
It's going to be miserable. The wind's going to be chilly. I can already set the scene for you right now. I really could. Some bro from Revere is going to be throwing his beer, you know, and I can already see this. I know how it's going to go.
I like
The UFC traditionally does well in Boston. I thought 220 was the card of the year that year. It was headlined by Ngannou and Stipe Miocic. And, you know, again, you know, Dana White was teaching boxing in 1994, you know, less than a mile away. I know that for a fact. I was in that gym at the time. So I think they, you know, again, it's an underwhelming main event. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Chris Weidman's a New York guy. I have no idea. I'm not going to pretend where the hell Dominic Reyes is from, but and I guess, you know, if Weidman wins, they'll position him against John Jones, because who the hell knows, right? The light heavyweight division. Whoever picks up a W, will MMA Twitter will be telling me they're ready to fight John Jones. So you know, I don't know why, maybe, you know, I thought for a minute there they might have done Asker and Maya on that card, but I think they're probably saving that for Madison Square Garden.
Did you actually take boxing classes from Dana White?
Can I tell you the truth?
Yes.
I'm going to tell you brutal, honest truth. There's a guy named Peter Welch who was my boxing guy when I was a kid.
Yeah.
He was Dana's partner. It was known in that gym that Dana was not the nicest of guys. I'll leave it there.
Oh, get out of here.
I'm not kidding. Nope, not even for a second. And I know that goes against a lot of what you've heard over the years. But and maybe I've got an axe to grind, certainly, because you know, I was 8 years old, and what the hell do I know? But yeah, I was in that gym, and remember him? The man had hair at one point. I can confirm that.
Brushes with Vince McMahon and Dana effing White. Look at you.
Weird life, man. And Josh Nason. Who the hell?
Yes. Three studs. No doubt about it.
You grow up in the right area. Well, two things I've learned about myself is that, one thing, I never prepare for anything. Total lack of preparation. That's for sure. And number two is you can really dumb your way into a lot of things. Just not know any better. That's kind of how what I do, you know?
That's how I met my wife.
Same here. Absolutely. How did you meet her? Did you guys, you know, like you had the laundromat or something like that?
No, honestly, it was, I found, there's a listing for buy a bride on the internet. And as she came in the mail, actually, it's worked out pretty good.
There you go. And listen, at least, and listen, nobody wants to go back to that life.
No.
You mentioned something on one of your previous podcasts, which totally rang true with me having a child now, two children, in fact, including a newborn. It's just really tough to do this job when you have kids, man. It really changes when you have kids. And that stuck with me. I know you have a little girl, I believe. So living the dad life is a totally different thing when you're trying to kind of get your career or, you know, your footprint off the ground. You know, it's really tough to do. It's not easy, man. It changes everything. And I think you were referencing Luke Thomas at the time, who I'm a huge fan of. Things change once you have kids, man. That's obviously the understatement of the year, you know?
Yeah, it's hard when, and I know people that have, you know, multiple kids have kind of figured this out or what have you, but it's hard when you have young kids. So so my daughter's almost three, and we don't obviously want to have her watch or try to replicate what she's seeing if I have any watching UFC. So I don't watch it while I'm around and watch wrestling around or all that stuff. And it's just kind of a thing which we don't do. So it makes it difficult because on Sundays, it's not like I can just sneak off for, you know, 4 hours and watch all the UFC I may have missed from the night before. So it's a trade-off, just trying to find times to sneak in fights. I mean, I try to do my best to get a good chunk of the main card watched that night. I'll try to watch some when she's down for a nap the next day, or try to like sneak a couple fights here and there, and the stuff I really want to watch. And then prelims, usually, if I'm lucky, I'll get to watch them Monday during the day if I work from home. So it's hard. Like it's like you got to find these like pockets of time. And I know some people aren't like this, but that's just the way that we do stuff. But yeah, and especially when there's show after show after show,
demands so much time.
It's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot.
And isn't that the complaint that most of the WWE fans I listen to too? Is that like I just can't invest 3 hours of my night on Monday to a shit product like this, you know? And excuse my language, but at least, you know, I will always say that the UFC, at least for the most part, delivers, Josh. Like, you walk away from it. How could you walk away from a night like, you know, 236 in Atlanta where you had back-to-back just all-time fights and not go, you know what, that was worth 4 hours of my time, you know?
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's all about how it leaves you feeling at the end of the day, you know? And everyone has that experience of going through, you know, you're watching a fight and you're just like, oh, you can just, you know, it's going to be just a 15-minute yep. slog or something like that. But you're like, all right, I need to kind of see the end result or whatever. And then that was how you get like a finish with like 30 seconds left to go in the third. And you're like, why can't this just happen like, you know, 10 minutes prior as you're trying to kind of work through. And it's simply because there's so many shows and you're just trying to work through all these shows. And yeah, it's not easy just to sit and sit. And I mean, God bless people that actually watch from the start and don't have the ability just to fast forward through. Like, I don't know how anyone does that. That's insane to me.
When I see people tweeting about the Contender Series on a Tuesday night, like, I don't know how you can do it because I can't. I'm feeding my kid. I'm trying to play video games. My 5-year-old is demanding my time. My 3-month-old, I'm trying to, you know, give him a bath and you know, just keep him alive, essentially. You know, it's just really tough to do. You know, I envy those people. I got one other thing, too, I wanted to ask you since we were here. I'm listening. I'm just reading, you know, on my laptop here. I'm looking. Could Colby Covington, who's a really undersized guy, do you think that Vince would do anything with him? Because according to him, apparently he's never heard of Brock Lesnar, but he's going to be the first WWE champion and UFC champion. I don't know if he means simultaneous, but don't you think Vince would kind of tone down his act anyway?
I think he's way too small for Vince to have any interest. Vince likes Brock. You know, he likes big guy. As much as they have some small guys doing some stuff now, I mean, he loves big guys. He just does. That's just how he's been built from the word go. That's the thing is every time these certain UFC guys get in this orbit of like, oh, you know, I'd love to do the pro wrestling thing. And people start running with it. And it's just like, no, it's not. It's not like anyone can just walk in there and like, look at people have been talking about Conor McGregor doing something with WWE forever. I talked about Paige VanZant doing something forever. You know, it's just, I mean, Kane made his pro wrestling debut last Saturday, Lucha promotion.
Incredible.
Yeah. And he had more, I would say more charisma, but he showed more in that. And like, I was more interested in that and I think he's been more interested in that than UFC. I mean, he got, you know, starched, dropped it, Francis Ngannou, and there's been nothing said about it, but he went down to Mexico to do a pro wrestling show and he wants to do more of it. And it's like, it's just so weird seeing him wear like that, the mask and all that stuff. It's like, where was this guy? You know, where was this guy before? It's just, I don't know, man, this whole business is weird between wrestling and MMA and all this stuff. Like guys are just looking to get money and looking to get attention. And the ones
I'm sorry to cut you off, but no, I would never fault one of these UFC guys who went to the WWE. I just really wouldn't. You know, if you're McGregor, who would never work in the WWE anyways at 5'9" and 155 pounds. But if you know, what am I want to do? Do I want to get, you know, my face punched in by Nate Diaz and make less money? Or do I want to make a ton of money headlining WrestleMania in a tag match or something with Becky Lynch and make God knows what, you know? Like, I would never fault any of these guys for that. But I just thought that was interesting because, you know, the way he was talking was more like, you know, it's a fait accompli. Like, I'm already, that's already in the works. I'm going to WWE. And the more I look at him, you know, he looks more to me like a lightweight than a welterweight. He's a small guy.
Yeah. And I think the reason that will never happen is if you look at, they've really stayed pretty apolitical in this Trump era. Even though that they have Donald Trump is a fucking WWE Hall of Famer. he's a Hall of Famer. You have a WWE Hall of Famer as your president, right? And a guy that he was headlined the highest selling WrestleMania of all time. Might have been highest selling wrestling pay-per-view of all time. The whole like hair versus hair with him and Vince McMahon. I mean, that's like, he did that whole thing. They don't acknowledge it at all. Like if they ever go to Washington, like when Trump won, they stay so far away from that, even though Vince, from what I understand, is conservative and what have you. But they have never walked that line. And it, I tell you what, like, people give them a lot of shit. That is impressive for them to be. They could easily swing that wave. They're like, nope, we are right down the middle, because they don't want it. Because, like, when the famous Michael Jordan quote about Nike shoes, and they asked him, why did he make more political statements? It's like, because Republicans buy Nikes too.
Right, right.
They don't, they're just like, we're apolitical, and that's what they do. And that's with Covington. I mean, with him comes the part of the shtick is the MAGA hat and that whole thing. They would never let that on TV. They haven't even come close to having a, you know, politically incorrect character like that. And other promotions have, and there's other indie workers that have, but they have stayed so far away from that. Like, so for Covington to say that's fine, but it's not grounded in any truth at all.
Well, last thing I'll say on Covington is, if you're a heel and you're going to play that role, why not align yourself with the ultimate heel character in the history of ever, maybe? You know, it just makes sense to me that if you're that guy and you have no redeeming qualities about you, why not wear a MAGA hat? And again, this is coming from somebody who, A, voted for Donald Trump, which I did, B, who leans conservative. And the reason, listen, we didn't want Donald Trump. As Republicans, we didn't. I was a Ted Cruz guy. I'll be brutally honest with you.
A Ted Cruz guy. Wow. All right.
Yeah, no, there's not a lot of Ted Cruz guys out there. And he got destroyed by Donald Trump. And that's fine. And you know what? I'm sorry to tell everybody, you know, it's going to happen again, for sure. He's probably going to win by 40 states, whoever he goes up against on the Republican dockets, Democratic side anyway. Get ready for 4 more years of that, because that's what's going to happen. And again, most conservatives, you have to understand, this is the greatest underdog story in history. This is a guy who won the presidency who his own people, his own party did not want in, period. We didn't want him. We did not want this guy. All that being said, I mean, it would only make sense to me that a guy who literally, you know, we'll talk about a guy who jumped in front of a train at the end of a post-fight press conference instead of shaking his opponent's hand, you know, and Robbie Lawler, for the way he acted after that fight, you know, is a national treasure. I mean, the guy's always class, and we just don't see that out of any fighters. We just don't. It only makes sense to me, and that he would wear a red hat and align himself with Donald Trump. I mean, that to me is like heel 101. It just does nothing for me, you know?
So we're up on just finished an hour, so we're on it. So before I let you go, tell people where they can listen to you, read your work, and all that stuff. How often they can check you out? Because I know, if I remember, you do a few shows a week. But give everyone the spiel. Where can they check you out?
Well, if anybody ever wants to hear me again after I just said it, I voted for Donald Trump. You can find me at therockfin.com.
Rokfin, right?
Rokfin. Just added a bunch of really interesting MMA personalities. We're growing. They're growing. Yeah, it's really cool. Original content. You know, I do videos. I do podcasts. I do all my writing there. Writing is my first love, Josh. I like to sink my teeth into stuff. I've got some really, really cool stuff coming up real soon that I think people are going to be very interested in, for the most part. Everything I do right now is at therockfin.com. Writing, podcasting, videos, live reactions, prediction shows. Every once in a while, we even chase Josh Nason down and he comes on with us. And
that's right.
If power doesn't come out, it's a good thing. yeah, man, rockfin.com. Find all my stuff there. Dave McGrath, Irish MMA 84. And, you know, of course, if there's anybody who, I get this all the time, my DMs are open. DM me. I'll more than happy to chew the fat with anybody at just about anything. I'm pretty open. So, and you know what? A lot of people take me up on it, and that's great too. And I'm sure I'll get 50 DMs by the morning, telling me why I was so wrong in 2016. And then, you know what? I don't disagree with you. Thank you.
It's very possible. Very possible. Are you going to be doing live ongoing coverage of the 2020 election that you've made your allegiances known?
I'm only going to do that if my dear friend Elizabeth Warren, who of course is 1/263rd Native American, which I understand, wins the nomination. Absolutely, I will. She's done a lot of great things for our state, the great state of Massachusetts, and she's a worthy candidate. Absolutely, Josh. So if she gets the nomination, I will do a live video every night. And of course, I'll have a beer in my hand, much like Elizabeth, because that was that video seemed very natural to me, did it not?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, it's always the worst when politicians try to act like regular people. And it's like, that's not how anyone acts at anything. It's not how they talk. It's not how they drink. If you can't drink a beer like a normal person, just get out. Just get out of here.
For people who haven't seen this video, her husband walks in the door and she, you know, I don't know, you know, when my wife walks in the door, Josh, I don't act like, you know, oh, you live here. You know, are you a stranger? Did you drift in? Is there a snowstorm? Is your car broken down? Do you need to use my phone? It's basically a robot, somebody who's been, you know, made in a lab from lesser Democrats, acting like a human being or trying to. And it's, you know, it's best unintentional comedy I've ever seen. I say that all the time. So, if there's anybody listening out there after this, great.
Well, Dave McGrath, welcome to the Josh Nason's Punch Out world. I'm glad you're here and glad you were able to join for an hour of just basically shooting the shit about life and fighting and all that stuff. And as we come up here in Boston in a couple of months, that should be a lot of fun. And yeah, as you mentioned, a lot of fun fights to watch and all that stuff. And obviously check out your work at Rockfin, R-O-K-F-I-N. Follow him on Twitter, Irish MMA 84. And I think we hit it. Dave McGrath, thanks so much.
Josh, I'm a huge fan of yours forever, brother. Thank you so much.
All right. Big thanks to all you for stopping by. Big thanks to Dave McGrath as well. As promised, let's get to, let's just kind of look over this UFC Uruguay card. Because, you know, and try to keep it positive. But there's the show is not being talked about anyone, but there are some fights I'm interested in seeing on this show. Let's see. Headliner, Shevchenko versus Liz Carmouche, women's flyweight title fight. I expect Shevchenko to win this pretty handily. Again, nobody's really talking about this. Co-mains, Vicente Luque against Mike Perry. I think that should be a lot of fun. Luque is one of those guys that has been on a really nice run, 16-6 mark coming into this. Mike Perry had a nice outing last time out. Luque is, he's one of those guys that he seems to be the fighter that some of the top guys don't want to fight. So I think he's been having a tough time getting some upper rank competition at welterweight. And he is, that division is super deep and this should be a lot of fun. I expect Luque to win that one. A little bit further down the card in terms of familiar names, Volkan Ozdemir against Ilir Latifi. This was a fight that was supposed to happen a couple months ago, I believe. It got put off due to injury, but this, you know, this is two lightweight, light heavyweight contenders, rather, looking to kind of find their way in the division. Not really anywhere near the top, but very similar to heavyweight that if you get on a run of like two or three wins in a row, you could earn yourself a title fight. And yeah, this one should be kind of interesting there. And that is really, honestly, that is like really it on this show. Let me actually go a little bit deeper and see if there's anything of interest on the undercard. UFC.com is not the best website in the world. Let's see about it. Tisha Torres is fighting on the show. And someone I've never heard of. Paulina Vanya, Gilbert Burns. Yeah, there's not a lot on the show. This is like, I think we're in a stretch of like two straight months with shows. So yeah, I mean, this is all leading into obviously the week after DC and Stipe, the rematch coming up and a lot of fun fights on that show. So we'll talk about that more next week. But yeah, it is a UFC fight night. It's on ESPN Plus, I believe. So enjoy that as you will. I'm going to let you go. Big thanks to all you guys for stopping by. Thank you for being loyal, even though I have not been as regular with these podcasts as I would like. And I should have a pretty good guest for next week. We can work it out schedule-wise. Otherwise, we may go to a different pool of guests I have not had on and talk about MMA and fighting and maybe pro wrestling and all that good stuff. But plenty of stuff to listen to on the website, plenty of stuff to read. So, yeah, thanks for all your support. This has been Josh Nason, Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Until next time, hopefully a little bit less caffeinated. Insert catchphrase here.